This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
From the Look East policy in the 1980s to an economic partnership agreement in 2005, Malaysia and Japan have certainly had a fruitful partnership in recent years. But what will this partnership look like as countries start to emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic? How will this change the economic priorities of both countries? I'm speaking this morning with His Excellency Oka Hiroshi, Ambassador of Japan to Malaysia, to find out. Ambassador, thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you very much indeed for having me.
So our two countries signed the Malaysia-Japan Economic Partnership Agreement in 2005. And since then, in 2016, Malaysia clocked in as Japan's 10th largest trading partner. And Japan is also consistently within the top 10 major import and export countries for Malaysia. But as we move into this post-COVID world, what are some areas that you think have the potential to grow even further?
One of the happy discoveries that I have been making ever since my arrival to Malaysia is very strong footprint in the new Malaysia in all the fields, including the business, the relations. There are 1,500 Japanese companies that are operating in Malaysia, and Japan is the fourth largest trading partner, and the third largest source of foreign direct investment. Actually, the cumulative values of the Japanese foreign direct investment is about the 80 billion the Malaysian ringgit. And of course, the Japanese business in Malaysia has been affected negatively because of the very much sluggish demand and the disruptions of supply chains and COVID-19. But thankfully, the now global the economy is slowly started to recover. And also the measures put in place by Malaysian government, which enables or allows the business to fully operate as long as they observe SOPs. So the some areas of the Japanese business, for instance, the semiconductors, automobiles, and packagings, and logistics are now making better performance compared with the last year. Actually, the latest survey conducted by JETRO 36, a Japanese business in Malaysia, saying that they are contemplating expanding their operations in Malaysia, as opposed to only 7% that were thinking about downsizing the operations. So this is a very much positive, the views expressed on the part of Japanese business for the potential of the business relations with Malaysia. There are good infrastructure, high value added supply chains, and the qualified the workforce is the kind of the giving Malaysia strength comparative advantage. The new areas, of course, the traditional E&E are the mainstay of the Japanese investment in Malaysia, but it's really important. But at the same time, new areas include the health sectors, medical devices manufacturing, digital, halal, and retail. All sorts of new areas are something that the Japanese investors are looking forward to make their presence in Malaysia. The latest visit by the Minister Azmin Ali is going to, I believe, a strong boost to this investment to Malaysia. And they have agreed to put in place digital and green for the future areas of cooperation.
Is that expansion just an expansion into further into their own specific industries, or is it more of a diversification into the new industries that you quoted?
Well, as long as the business which operate in Malaysia, of course, the expansion of the areas which have been operating is the kind of the major possibility. But they are looking at the huge potential that Malaysia offers for Japanese businesses. The Japanese businesses are looking into the possibility of diversifying their operations in Malaysia.
So you've spoken previously as well about this diversification and the potential that Malaysia holds for some Japanese food industry companies as well to make Malaysia its halal staging hub, I believe was the term. I'm curious as to whether or not such recent events, like so we've recently had a fake halal meat scandal, logos, etc., whether or not that has harmed those plans and what could potentially be done to restore confidence, to see more of the Japanese food industry come here into Malaysia?
Well, the Japanese business regard Malaysia as very much the good entry point for the enlarging the halal market beyond Malaysia, the Islamic countries and the Middle Eastern market, because the Malaysia offers very much trustful and credible the halal the certificates in the form of JACIM, so halal certificate. So Japanese, the business are very much the looking forward to getting JACIM certificate so that they can make an inroads to the expanding the halal market. So there are lines of the Japanese business already making the investment in Malaysia, as well as there are several other companies which are considering making investment in Malaysia. So I'm very much thinking about the future potential of the halal cooperation between Japan and Malaysia.
As you said earlier, there are a number of Japanese companies that have been present and invested in Malaysia for many years, and they do comprise a third of the total investment, total direct investment flow into our country. So what is it that you're hearing from them as well in terms of their confidence in continuing to operate? Give us some insight into, I guess, what the outsider view is of how Malaysia is handling the COVID situation, whether there are any concerns from your end about economic instability, political instability of that sort.
Well, the basing on the JETRO survey, which was conducted the December last year, the highest number of the positive views was expressed by Japanese business in Malaysia in terms of the how quickly they are reverting back or coming back to the pre-COVID-19 situations. So that means the measures and policies put in place by the government, which allows the business to operate as long as they fully comply with the SOP, is kind of the producing a very much the good positive outcome on the part of the at businesses. So for this, the achievement or outcome, we are very much grateful for the very good understanding of, by the Malaysian government.
All right. So now I also do want to get a perspective on Japan itself, Ambassador. So if we take a look at Japan, the reports coming out of there in terms of COVID-19 are unfortunately not very encouraging. COVID cases have crossed the 4,000 a day mark, and there are fears that a fourth wave may be even larger than the previous three that the country has already weathered. And we recently had reports that the Tokyo Olympics may also have to be postponed again or even cancelled. Now, this doesn't look particularly good for the Japanese economy. So I wondered, what were your thoughts on its trajectory, taking into account some of the latest developments?
Well, the last year, the Japanese economy has been hit hard by the COVID-19. So it's true that the last year was negative growth of the minus 4.8%. But we're expecting that the thanks to, for instance, looking at the last two quarters, the fourth quarter of the last year, as well as the first quarter of this year, two consecutive quarters, the recorded positive growth. So we are quite firm of the view that the economy is now coming back to the recovery, thanks to the government, the economic assistance measures. And also, Japan is the largest credit country, and for the last 29 years, and unemployment is very much low, less than 3%. So there is a very good, the strong basis for us to continue to grow. The COVID-19, yes, we are still try to address the COVID-19, but thankfully the vaccine started from the February, and we're expecting the during May the vaccinations for the frontline is going to be completed for the around the the 5 million the frontliners, and also for the seniors. We are aging societies, so seniors means that the 36 million population is going to be vaccinated by the end of June. So we are, thinking again about the prospect of the economic recovery of Japan. I just briefly touching upon, we just too much emphasis on the business between Japan and Malaysia. Of course, the business is mainstay of relations between Japan and Malaysia, but education and human capacity development has and will continue to be our main pillars of the cooperation. But expanding the scope of the cooperation points us health areas, of course, and the maritime cooperation is emerging areas for cooperation. We're supporting law enforcement agency and also smart city, making use of the digital technologies, and also the security cooperations between Japan and Malaysia is also new areas of cooperation because we are two both maritime nations.
I'm speaking with His Excellency Oka Hiroshi, Ambassador of Japan to Malaysia. Up next, what it will take for Japan to return to its pre-COVID economic levels. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is His Excellency Oka Hiroshi, Ambassador of Japan to Malaysia. So, Ambassador, earlier we touched on the fact that Japan is currently struggling under what could be a fourth, even larger wave of COVID-19 infections. This has taken quite the toll on the Japanese economy, which contracted close to 5% last year. So now I wanted to get your thoughts on what you think it will take for Japan to return to its pre-COVID economic levels, presumably once this pandemic is under control.
Well, there are a couple of things that they perhaps needed. Firstly, of course, we are not thinking of the returning back simply to pre-COVID-19 situations.
We ideally, we exceed it, yes.
Yes, making use of this recovery phase to kind of the boost or transform the structure of economy. So two key areas, the digital or technological development would be important. One is the green technologies, and second one is the digital technologies. The Prime Minister Suga announced that Japan is going to be carbon neutral by 2050. So now we are looking into the possibility of a cooperation between Japan and Malaysia in green hydrogen development. And also the storage battery, which is a pre-requirement for the full electrifications of the cars, the electric cars. Again, we are very much looking forward to cooperate with Japan and Malaysia, and also making full use of the digital technology, because rather slow economic growth and low fertility rate is a challenge, but how we can make use of the digital technology to define this, the low mortality rate by helping mobilities, providing telemedicines, or enabling a kind of the tele-agriculture, all these kind of things we are now looking into as a future engine for the Japanese economic recovery. But at the same time, also the economic recovery is also a fundamental requirement. So we are very much happy to see a gradual sign of the economic recovery taking place in the world. And Japan happens to be the party to several major the free trade agreement, because the Japan is a party to CPTPP, and also Japan is a party to RCEP, and also bilaterally we are party to free trade agreement with America, UK. So actually the free trade areas covering 80% of the world GDP is merging with Japan as its hub. So in these areas, they would very much like to keep the freedom, open trading, the investment regime in the world. This is areas we can contribute for the global, the post the COVID-19 recovery.
And how would you classify the policy priorities of this current Suga administration? Because Prime Minister Suga Yoshihide, he came into office just in time to firefight this COVID-19 pandemic. So we haven't really seen much in the way of the economic policies implemented that could take Japan forward, as opposed to mitigating the impact of the pandemic. So perhaps you could shed some light on this for us.
Actually, but he has not come to Prime Minister's office from nowhere. Actually, he has been the right-hand man during the Abe, the cabinet, for the last 8 years. So he has been following, or he has been closely engaged, or he has been an integral part of the Japanese policies, domestic policies, as well as foreign policies. So I don't expect any kind of disruptions, the longer term it is needed for the Prime Minister Suga to exert his full the potential and capabilities.
So what kind of areas do you anticipate that he will focus on first, presumably in the situation that the pandemic comes further under control?
Well, firstly, of course, the recovery from the COVID-19 is a must requirement. And also for this, the recovery to take place not only for Japan, but not only for the regions as well as the global communities. The peace and stability in the international community is very much important. So I'm sure that the Prime Minister Suga is now eyeing to how Japan can make contributions to the peace and stability in the world or in the region.
All right. Now, I also do want to get your thoughts as well, Ambassador, on some of the kind of international issues here in the region, because over the past few years, East Asia and Southeast Asia has not been necessarily the most peaceful area. I mean, we have seen on the trade and economics front, we have seen a lot of tensions between the US and China influencing a lot of the regional politics as a result. So where does Japan fit into this? Because Japan, I mean, most recently, I believe, has come out to vow to oppose, and I quote, coercion from China in the South and East China Seas. So is this signaling a wider turn against China, perhaps more towards the U.S.?
Well, the first of all, we see the what we call the Indo-Pacific, the regions, the region which is kind of the, you know, the expanse of the Indian Ocean and Pacific Ocean has been the achieving very much vibrant mm-hmm. economic developments. And I believe that this will continue to be the case. So there is a huge potential for this part of the world to grow rapidly. But at the same time, yes, as you, Lin San, you have pointed out, we have witnessed certain the security challenges. So what we're going to do is how to put in place a very much stable and the principles open and free environment so that all the countries in the regions will continue to enjoy the or fully develop their mm-hmm. the growth potential. So what we are kind of the emphasizing the need to rule basis the free and open international or regional orders. We don't rule out any countries from this the concept. When it comes to the rule-based systems, the more countries sign up to this rule-based system, the better for the stability and the peace in the region. So we are kind of promoting this free and open in the Pacific, in the region, as our contributions for the stability and the peace in the regions. And we are very much pleased that gradually the acceptance of this, the free and open in the Pacific concept is now enlarging. Of course, during the December or November last year's mm-hmm. Japan and ASEAN summit meetings, the prime ministers have also agreed that there is a fundamental commonalities between what we propose, free and open in the Pacific, and what the ASEAN propose as an outlet for in the Pacific. So now we are working to how to support the ASEAN outlook for the Indo-Pacific by respecting the centrality and the coherence of the ASEAN. So this is the kind of the approach we are taking for the regional and global the stability and peacemaking.
Mm. But when it comes to the emphasis on a rules-based order, Ambassador, China has similar claims on islands in the East China Sea as it does here in the South China Sea. So our Spratly Islands are the source of much concern in the maritime security negotiations with China for us here in Malaysia. And for Japan, there is something similar with the Senkaku Islands, or what China refers to as the Diaoyu Islands. So taking that into consideration, and as well as the fact that China has made further incursions here in the South China Sea over the past couple of months, indicating perhaps a more forward, more aggressive stance. Is this going to have wider repercussions on Japan's ability as well to maintain that free and open trading position in this space, as well as stage an economic recovery, considering China's position as an important trade entity in the region?
Well, of course, China is Japan's largest trading partner. So for us, it is important to develop stable and constructive relations between Japan and China. Actually, we have agreed in the past to develop between Japan and China the mutually beneficial relations based on the strategic interests. So in that case, we are neighbors. So of course, we have to deny that there are certain challenges and problems between our two countries, but we would like to continue to maintain the relations where we can make a candid, the frank conversations so that we can convey our views. In that case, the Chinese very much welcome to sign up for this the free and open in the Pacific the concept. This is a rule-based systems. So whatever claims, the Prime Minister, the Abe in the past, the promoted very much simple three principles. Whatever claims need to be presented based on the laws. And not to advance the claims based on coercions or the use of force. And whenever the problems or issue the happens, they try to solve by peaceful means. So we very much like to find solutions. The whoever countries we have issues, including China.
So moving forward, Ambassador, as we head into this new uncharted waters post-COVID-19, what are the things that you hope to see from your tenure, not just in terms of government-to-government relations here between Malaysia and Japan, but also with Japan on the wider scale of ASEAN?
Well, for instance, looking at what is happening in Myanmar, of course, this has a very much the regional or even the global connotations. And we depend on the ASEAN's crucial role to bring back the democracy and bring up the stability. And we all count on the diplomatic activities and efforts initiative of ASEAN. ASEAN has a huge role to play for stability and peace in the region. So we are... The relations between Japan and ASEAN is not new. You know, starting from the 60s and 70s, we have cultivated deep ties, the business ties, economic ties, and the political ties. Now we have a very much deep, close, strategic relations with each of the ASEAN countries, as well as between Japan and ASEAN as a whole. Like I said at the Japan and ASEAN Summit agreed to work together for the cooperation between FOIP and AWIP. So we very much like to promote cooperation in all the fields, the economic fields and the political fields and the cultural fields as well, because at the end of the day, it is people who are going to maintain sustain the long-term friendship between Japan and ASEAN. So we very much like to deepen cultural and educational cooperation between Japan and ASEAN, of course, including Malaysia.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Ambassador. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with His Excellency Oka Hiroshi, Ambassador of Japan to Malaysia. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.